Okay, I need to know today, especially if you are ready. Are you ready? Okay. Those of you at home, you really need to be ready. Those of you at Stone Point, you really, really need to be ready. And those of you at Gwinnett Church need to be ready. And everybody in the room with me in the balcony, are you ready? Okay. We are in the middle of a series. And if you fall asleep and wake up at the end and say, what happened, which you probably won't today especially, if you get to the end of today's message and you think, oh, I really need to see that again, which you probably won't happen either, actually. But if in the middle you think, I wish my sister-in-law were here, she really needs to hear this. If you will just go to justaskit.org, you can watch today's message and the entire series. And hopefully, if this is your first time with us watching or in the room or one of our rooms, you'll go back and watch the entire series because all of these messages kind of build. Now, the name of the series is Ask It, and we've said the subtitle is that this is the question that answers just about everything. One single question we're talking about for 6 weeks, and we believe this is the question that answers just about everything, and we're all going to say the question together because I want this to be so etched in your thoughts that this becomes the filter for every invitation, every decision, every opportunity that comes your way. And the question is, say it with me, what's the... Yeah, one more time with a little bit more enthusiasm. What's the... Okay, we said that we kind of fleshed this thing out. We've looked at it through from three different perspectives. And we said that when we ask this question, we can't just rush by it. We need to ask it this way. In light of my past experience, my current circumstances, my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do or what is the wise thing for me to do? In light of my past experience, because my past didn't like yours and yours didn't like mine, in light of my current circumstances, which change all the time, my current stage of life, in light of my future hopes and dreams, and your future hopes and dreams are unique to you. So in light of your past, your present, and your future hopes and dreams, what is the wise, not the right thing, that's easy. What is the wise, not the legal thing, that's, you know, we're all accountable to that. What is the wise, not what can I get by with, what is the wise thing to do? And then every week I've given you the same homework assignment. And basically your homework is just to ask it. Of every invitation, every opportunity, every decision, ask the question. Even if you don't act on it, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself to know what the wise thing to do is because this is such a clarifying question. In fact, it's so clarifying, it really erases all the gray, all the shades of gray where we kind of deceive ourselves and find loopholes and make decisions we, you know, eventually regret. This is the clarifying the decision. So today, we're going to take this question and apply it to one specific area of your life. And I just tell you up front, this is just really uncomfortable. I would say it's uncomfortable for me, but actually I enjoy making you uncomfortable. So I will be comfortable, you will be uncomfortable. And that's okay because you all want to get better. We all want to get better. We want our lives to be all that our lives can be. And this question is so helpful. It's especially helpful in the area we're going to talk about today. So to sort of get us there, kind of want to set this up. Isn't it true that when you're tempted to do something you know you shouldn't do? Isn't it amazing how you have like these self conversations and you talk yourself into it? I mean, the truth is, your greatest regrets, you were there for it, right? Your greatest regrets, you were there right before it and right after. You were there for the whole thing. It's not like you woke up, well, some of you woke up, but for the most part, most of us were like conscious and, you know, just sober enough to experience the whole thing. And we saw what we were about to do coming and we're like, well, you know, I probably shouldn't, and I shouldn't call her back and I shouldn't go and I shouldn't stay and I shouldn't take that job. And we, you know, you kind of knew. And then what did you start doing? We all do this. You start talking yourself into a dumb decision. And then you look back and you go, how could I have been so dumb? And or how could I have been so stupid? Or why did I see that coming? And you were there the whole time. And you talked yourself into something that you now regret. And here's how we do it. We talk ourselves into it by saying, well, there's nothing wrong with. And then the next thing we know, we've done something wrong. And we went, well, that was really wrong. But all the way right up to the line where we did the wrong thing, we excused it. So here's something we've all learned as adults to kind of get our head around today's idea, and that's this. It's a bad idea to assume that if something's not wrong, then it's right. It's a bad idea to assume, well, if there's nothing wrong with it in general, then it's right for me. If there's nothing wrong with it in general for the general population, then I should assume it's the right thing for me. That's a bad idea, and all of us have lived long enough to do that. Now, here's the thing. If you're a Christian, a Jesus follower, you have been commanded through the New Testament. You have been commanded to live above mere right and wrong. You've been commanded to ask this better question. Not is it right, not is it wrong, but is it the wise thing to do? Because you can get yourself in a lot of trouble doing things that just aren't wrong. Now, if you're not a Christian or a Jesus follower, you have been invited by God who loves you to ask this question and to live above mere right and wrong. Now, when I was spent a lot of time talking to high school students. And when I would teach this to high school students, I came up with this little rhyme. It's a little bit Barney-esque, okay, if you remember the purple dinosaur, okay? So bear with me, but it's a rhyme, and it kind of goes to the heart of the issue, and it goes like this. There's good and there's bad, but that's not our cue, but rather, what is the wise thing to do? There's good and there's bad, but that's not our cue. In other words, we're not going to take our cue from simply right and wrong. But the better question is, what is the wise thing to do? Let's just all repeat this together. Would you just humor me? Ready? Don't sing it, okay? Get that picture out of your mind. Okay, ready? Here we go. There's good and there's bad, but...
That's not our cue.
Cue. But... Yeah, did you get... Those are the hand motions. Cue. When you teach high school students, you have to have hand motions for everything. Okay, yeah, so there's good and there's bad, and that's not our cue. In other words, we're not going to just excuse decisions based on there's nothing wrong with. Now today, I want to take this big, broad question, a lot of my past experience, current circumstances, future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do? And I want to apply it to your moral decisions, the decisions that relate to your sexuality and expressions of your sexuality, whether you're dating, married, in between, divorced, straight, gay, it doesn't matter. Anything to do with your sexuality, I want to apply this question to that area of your life. That's why it's going to be fun for me and uncomfortable for you, okay? Now, here's what we know, okay? Listen, we're all adults, so we can jump into this pretty deep. Here's what we know. Bad moral decisions, and this is very important what I'm about to say. If you're not a church person, please don't read anything churchy into anything I'm about to say. I'm not asking you to adhere to a certain moral standard. We're not talking about that today. I'm not asking you to be like a good person, like a good Christian person. If you're a Christian, you should be. If you're not a Christian, you have your own standard. So when I say bad moral decisions, I'm just talking about when you look back and you have regrets in terms of, you know, things that were sexual. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, you're bad the way that you define bad. You define it any way you want to today, okay? Not every weekend, but today, all right? Here we go. So bad moral decisions are generally preceded by a series of unwise decisions. This is how the world works. Your greatest regret morally was probably preceded by a series of unwise decisions. For some of you, it goes all the way back to high school. Your mom said, I don't think you should go with them on spring break. Remember that? Of course you do. You don't remember spring break, but you remember the conversation with your mom, right? And your mom or dad's like, I don't really think you should go. And you would be like, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? And your mom's going, it's not that it's wrong. I just don't think you should go. And you're like, well, tell me why it's wrong. So-and-so went and you went, everybody goes and, you know, and your mom's all caught up and she just kind of knows, and she didn't have the word maybe, but she just knew this isn't the wisest thing to do, right? And then you got there, you know, and you probably remember this part. You got there and you're supposed to have two rooms, you know, and then you got there and there was just that one room. And you're thinking, see, even something in you is like, I don't know, you know, but it's like, hey, there's just one room. Or else somebody said, hey, there never was two rooms. We just told our parents there was two. They just never told you there was just one. And you got there. And so now you're kind of making another I don't know decision, which led to another I don't know decision. And then you end up with regret because in general, our greatest regrets morally, they didn't happen all at one time. They came at the end of a series, not of bad decisions and doing wrong things. They came at this end of a series of doing unwise decisions, of unwise decisions. And how do we get there? We got there with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with. There's nothing wrong with having lunch with her. We work together. I mean, people have lunch all the time. I remember one time when I was a kid, the pastor came over for lunch. So even pastors have lunch. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with lunch. And there's nothing wrong with dinner. Okay, we worked late, you know, and, you know, my wife wasn't home, my husband wasn't home, and everybody was kind of going out, and there were like six or seven of us, and we got to the restaurant, and the other five just didn't show up. It was just the two of us, you know, but there's, come on, whoa. Are you telling me there's something wrong with eating dinner? Okay, then shut up. There's nothing wrong with dinner, right? And there's nothing wrong with working late together. Our team works together all the time, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with working late together, and there's nothing wrong with confiding in her. I mean, there's things that are kind of tough at home. And, you know, we started talking. Next thing you know, I'm just telling her what's going on in my marriage and things aren't great. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with confiding in a friend. It saves you money. I could either go to a counselor and spend $100 an hour, or I could confide in her. So this is good stewardship. I think it's God's will. And she's such a good listener. Speaking of listening, there's nothing wrong with listening. I'm just a shoulder to cry on. I'm just a listener. I'm just listening. There's nothing wrong with listening. And there's nothing wrong with dropping by. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, my family, we'd all be in the car together. And my dad would say, hey, let's go drop by. So my parents taught me to drop by. So there's nothing wrong with dropping by. And you know what? I heard he wasn't feeling good or didn't show up at work or things. So I just decided to drop by. And come on, there's nothing wrong with a hug. Come on. Are you telling me? You're telling me there's something wrong with a hug now? If this was a scenario in your favorite television series, okay? And the whole episode that night was da 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 da. And then at the end, the music is ominous and they're standing at the door and you really like her, but you don't like him, or you really like him, but you don't like her in the series, you know? And all of a sudden, there's that hug at the door and the music closes and, you know, the scene fades and it's to be continued next week and you're so mad. You're thinking, don't do it, he's a jerk. Or, you know, don't go with her, she's something worse than a jerk, you know? And you're so upset. You're upset about two things. Number one, you don't want them to go what's next. And secondly, you got to wait a whole week to find out what happens, right? Or let's make it more personal. It's not something on television. This is a friend of yours. And you're watching this thing play out. And you know, you heard about lunch, you heard about dinner, and you found out they worked late together and everybody else was gone. It was just the two of them. And so you're like, gosh, I feel like I need to say something. So you kind of bring it up and he says, or she says, hey, whoa, Mr. Judgmental, Miss Judgmental, there's nothing wrong with, and you're thinking, you know, you're right. There's nothing wrong with it, but it just doesn't seem right. There's nothing wrong with it, but it just doesn't seem, what was that word the preacher kept talking about? Wise, that's what it was. It just doesn't seem like it's the wise thing to do. Then you find out, you know, they're into each other's personal life and you're watching this happen. You watch this drama unfold with somebody you know and you see where it's going, but every time you try to say something, they just, you know, shout you down. Hey, we're not doing anything. Well, that's true. Nothing wrong there. Yeah. Haven't done, you know, haven't crossed any lines, but you just sense that this is a series of unwise decisions that's moving in an unhealthy direction. Or let's get real personal. This is you. It always gets quiet at that point in the message. I don't know what's up. Yeah, this is you. And again, you're the one who's like, nothing wrong, nothing wrong, nothing wrong. And you know what you're doing? Because again, I can kind of poke at you a little bit, because when I'm finished, I just leave. You have to go home, okay? Here's the thing, okay, because I love you. You, come on, we're all good at this. You just lie to yourself. Now, you lie to everybody else if they bring it up, but before you lie to everybody else, before you're dishonest with everybody else, before you're not transparent with everybody else, come on, we're friends. You're not even transparent with you. You have a hard time admitting what anybody on the outside can see happening. That's why I say bad moral decisions, you define this any way you want. I'm not trying to narrow it down. Bad moral decisions are generally preceded by a series of unwise decisions. So we get closer to the edge and closer to the edge and closer to the edge, and then somebody calls us on it. We go, hey, I haven't done anything. The edge is, I got another foot, I'm fine. And closer to the edge, and then somebody says, I never, whoa, I haven't done anything. And they're, you're right, you haven't done anything. But they just see where this is going. Now, this is very important, what I'm going to say, in case you checked out. Just listen to this part. Just, okay, real quick, look. Living on the edge is fine if you're counting calories, okay? In other words, if you got a certain number of calories you can eat in a day, I recommend you eat them all. Okay, you just max out your calorie count, okay? If we're talking about you're supposed to be home at midnight, then get home right at midnight. Don't come home at 11:30. Use all those 30 minutes to do whatever thing you're doing and get home right at midnight. You know, if you're supposed to be at work at 8 in the morning, don't get there at 7. Get there at 8. I mean, just take it right up to the edge, right? If you got a budget and you have a category for clothes and you got some money left over, spend every dollar of it. Take it right to the max. There's areas in our lives where it is fine to live on the edge. You know why? Because if you eat 50 extra calories, no big deal. You spend 25 extra dollars in a category, no big deal. You're 10 minutes late to work, no big deal. You're 10 minutes late with your curfew, your parents, you can talk, no big deal. But come on. When it comes to moral things, when it comes to relational things, when it comes to the expressions of your sexuality, there are certain lines, once you cross them, it just creates extraordinary regret and extraordinary complexity. And you already know this. We all have a story or 10 that we could tell, don't we? So with all that in mind, I know I say this all the time, but it's because I just don't know what else to say. But listen, if there is a God who loves you, and if there is a God who cares so much about you that God would say, I know this isn't the perfect picture for you, but I want you to think of me as a heavenly perfect father. If there is a God who's created you, and as the Old Testament says, if there's a God who has a future for you, and as the New Testament says, if there is a God who knows your name and cares about you, then what would we expect God to say on this subject? Go for it. Walk the line. Be careful. No. We would expect him to say what any good parent would say to their 17-year-old daughter or their 17-year-old son, which is, hey, not so close. So the Apostle Paul, writing to a group of brand new Christians in the city of Corinth, and if you read the New Testament, there's two books with the name Corinthians in them, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. We think that Paul actually wrote four letters to this little church in Corinth, and two of them got lost, and two of them were found, and so they got put in the New Testament. And he's writing to a very pagan society. In fact, if you know much about Corinth, if you read much about Corinth, or even if you just read Paul's letters to the Corinthians, I'm telling you, there was stuff going on in that church that would just, it was unbelievable. I mean, it's almost you couldn't even talk about it in church, and it was happening in their church. So this is a very secular audience who believes Jesus is the Son of God, that he rose from the dead, that he's their Savior, and they're trying to figure out, how do you be like an ex-pagan Christian? They grew up going to a temple where prostitution was encouraged, and now Paul's saying, I don't know about that. So they're trying to figure it out. And so Paul is writing to this audience from a culture not too different than ours in terms of culture, and he's trying to figure out, okay, how do I tell these new Christians, okay, you're just going to hurt yourself. So here's what he says, and these words that many of us believe are inspired by God are so relevant for all of us. Here's what he says on the topic. He says, flee from sexual immorality. In other words, don't flirt with it. Don't see how close you can get without fill in the blank, How close can I get to fill in the blank without fill in the blank, He says, flee. It's a little Greek word that means run away, okay? Get as far from as possible. Now, here's the thing. Here's where we all agree. This is what every husband wants his wife to do. This is what every wife wants her husband to do. This is what everybody in a serious relationship wants their partner to do. This is what every parent wants their teenage son and daughter to do. In fact, this is what every 17-year-old boy wants his 13-year-old sister to do. So to some degree, we're all hypocrites because we know this is good for the people we love. But for sometimes, we're not so sure it's good for us. And then the Apostle Paul says something, and if this sounds familiar, it's because I'm going to preach on this passage about twice a year, so just get used to it, okay? Because this next observation, this should make you want to read the New Testament, even if you don't think it's inspired. That's okay. You don't read anything because it's inspired. You should read the New Testament. The Apostle Paul makes a comment that is so ahead of his time. It took about 1,500 or 1,600 years for psychologists and therapists to figure this out. Actually longer. I'm just kind of trying to be conservative. It took a couple thousand years for us to stumble upon the reality of what he said. This is in the Bible, written 2,000 years ago. He says this, flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits, and now just want to make sure I don't lose you, you can define sins any way you want, and anything that you would consider to be immoral, you can put it in this category. Anything that you would consider a guy should never, a woman should never, that he should never, a person should never, you define it any way you want. Paul says this, that all other sins a person commits, In other words, Paul says, this is huge, sexual sin is like no other category of sin. Sexual sin is in a category all of its own. There ain't nothing like it, is what Paul says. Now, you know what's so interesting about that? Is that people who do what I do and people who spend a lot of time with people who are trying to overcome their past would tell you that when somebody walks in the office with extraordinary, extraordinary, extraordinary regret and extraordinary guilt and complex things that they're trying to work through, 90% of the time, there's something sexual involved. People move on from all kinds of other things, but things sexual just seem to stick around and stay with us. And part of it is this, we've said this before, is because we live in a culture like Paul's culture that thinks sex and sexuality is just physical. It's just physical, it's just physical, it's just physical. And then eventually we realize, you know what? I don't think it was just physical. I think somehow this affected my soul, it affected my heart, it affected my conscience, it affected the way I view myself, it affected the way I view other women, the way I view other men. All of a sudden I realized this wasn't an isolated event that I could say, hey, remember when you graduated from high school? Yeah, remember that. It's not like that. It's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. And eventually we all come to that conclusion. And Paul says 2,000 years ago, he says, look, every other sin a person commits, look what he says, every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but a person who sins sexually, they sin against their own body. He says, there's nothing like it. Now, it's not worse. These aren't sins that are worse than all other sins. They're just unique in the way they impact a person. So Paul says, look, Corinth, Christians, 21st century Christians, because of this, because of what you know, you didn't need to read the Bible to know this. Because of your own past, because of your own confusion, because of the things you've had to overcome, because of things you've seen other people overcome. When it comes to morality and all things sexual, flee, as in run away from, as in stay far back from anything immoral. Now, not because it's not forgivable. This has nothing to do with forgiveness. In other words, sexual sin is not in a category all of its own because if God won't forgive it. In fact, it's in the New Testament. There's this precious, this incredible emotional story. You've heard it or read it, where Jesus, you know, encounters a woman who was actually caught in the act of adultery, and in that culture, they were going to stone her to death. And Jesus is the only one who extends forgiveness. And then he says to her, don't do that anymore. Stop doing that. I love you and accept you unconditionally. I love you so much, I gotta tell you something. Don't do that. Anyway, this is not a forgiveness issue, but I'll tell you what. Of all the sins, or all the activities, if you don't like the word sin, of all the behavior, if you don't like the word immorality, of all the behaviors that people have a hard time forgiving themselves for, things sexual are the things that people have a hard time forgiving themselves for. God forgives. God moves on. God accepts. God extends grace. But in this area, let's be honest, we have a very difficult time extending grace and forgiveness to ourselves. So God, who loves you, who's not against you, he's for you, says, come on. When it comes to this, don't allow a series of unwise decisions that you defend by saying there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, there's nothing wrong with, to get you to the place where you step over a line that follows you potentially in your heart, in your conscience, maybe physically, the rest of your life. The issue isn't forgiveness. The issue is consequence. So, at the end of this little passage, you know, Paul says, you know, flee sexual immorality. All other sins a person commits are outside the body, but the person who sins sexually sins against their own body. And then, this is so awesome, that's kind of the law. That's kind of the do's and don'ts. That's kind of the bottom line. That's kind of the right and wrong. And then Paul, this is so powerful, Paul lifts our eyes up to a higher standard. He says, look, when it comes to sexuality, when it comes to morality, when it comes to immorality, whether you're single, you know, whether you're married, whether you're straight, whether you're gay, whether you're a teenager, whether you're in a second marriage or coming out of a third marriage, it doesn't matter. He said, here is the standard that God followers. Here's the standard that people who say, I want to follow Jesus are to live with and to follow. Look, this is so powerful. He says, therefore, honor God with your bodies. Honor God with your body. Think about this. This is such a different standard than, well, is there anything wrong with? Is there anything wrong with? Is there anything wrong with? Is there a law against it? Will we get caught? Will there be a consequence? Is anybody going to get pregnant? Is there? In other words, instead of saying, how close can I get to fill in the blank without filling in the blank? Paul says, come on, you don't want to live like that. You know where that leads. You dance on a dangerous line where ultimately you hurt yourself. He says, I have a better standard. What if the new filter for your sexual expressions were this? Will this be honoring to God? I know what you're thinking. You just took all the fun out of my whole life with that. Will this be honoring to God? Oh, Andy, I'll just stay at home the rest of my life. I mean, really? But think about it before you blow me off. Just think about this for a second. What would it look like to honor God with your body? Let me ask you another question. 10 years from now? Oh, no, that's too long, okay? 5 years from now? Nah. 1 year from now? 1 year from now? If you spend a year asking the question when it comes to all things moral and sexual, am I honoring God with my body? Do you think you'd have more or fewer regrets? Do you think you would be more unhealthy or more healthy? Do you think you would view yourself in a more healthy or unhealthy way? Do you think your relationships will be healthier or unhealthier? God's not against you. God's for you. Here's what God knows that you'll eventually learn. We all eventually learn this. God knows that you will never be happier than your relationships, ever. You will never be happier than your relationships. Would you rather be deserted on an island with enough food and a boatload of money, or food and a boatload of friends? You will never be happier. I don't even know that's a good illustration. I just made that up, okay? So don't think too hard about that. It may fall apart, okay? But because you're going, well, it depends. How long am I going to be there, and do I get to take the money when I'm rescued? Okay, so don't go there. The point is this. Here's what you'll eventually learn. You will never be happier than your relationships. And nothing complicates a relationship like sexualizing it. And so God, who loves you, says, come on. Just if you could, just step back and begin to ask the harder question. What's the wise thing to do? And if you want some real specifics, ask this question. How do I honor God with my body? In other words, instead of asking how close can I get, it's how do I honor God with my bod? We didn't misspell it. We just wanted to keep you awake. Okay, now, here's the thing, and you know this, okay? Come on, we're smart. We're tracking together. Culture, let me put it this way. Culture, and this is the problem. This is what makes this so difficult. Culture baits us to the edge of disaster morally and then chastises us when we step over certain lines. Think about this. Culture baits us to the edge. Every single television show you watch, every single movie, every single theme, every single book, there's something sexual, and it's all just draws us up to the line, the way we're supposed to dress, the way we're supposed to act, the way we're supposed to dance, the way we're supposed to drink, the way everything in culture just draws us up to the edge of you know, immorality, however you define that, of just, you know, terrible decisions morally. And then it's so crazy. Culture baits us to the edge, and then when we step over certain lines, it chastises us. You know, she's pregnant. You know, she's such a slut, I know. So wait. She's just doing whatever you thought. She just entertained herself. What? I mean, why suddenly is she a slut? I mean, how? Where's that line? Well, we just know she is. Did you hear what he did? Yeah, he did what everybody in every television show, commercial, and movie did. I know, but you're not supposed to actually do it. You're just supposed to entertain yourself with it. He stepped over the line, and we just said, that's the culture. Baits us to the edge. We step over, and it's like, oh, that's so sick. That's just sick. Isn't that true? So come on, if God, who loves you, loves you, and God, who knows you live in a culture much like Corinth, what do you think God would say? He'd say, come on. You got to step back. You can't. There's nothing wrong with. You see, you don't want to live like that. So here's the question. In light of your past experience, In light of your current circumstances and your future hopes and dreams, when it comes to sexual expressions, when it comes to morality, what is the wise thing for you to do? Now, here's the deal. Some of you have a past. You have a sexual past. You got big sexual history. And I'm going to tell you, you can't go from current, you know, sexual history where you're just sexually active with whatever, whoever. And I know that's kind of extreme, but, you know, you're just kind of living the life and suddenly you're going, well, I'm just going to turn all that off. That probably isn't going to happen. You're going to have to take some drastic measures if you take this seriously, especially if you're a Christian. One of the things that I love is I've been teaching this for so many years, and many of you have heard me give you the one-year challenge if you're single to say, hey, if you really want to do something extraordinary in your relationship with God, take a year off dating. Just take a year off dating. Just mark it on your calendar. No one-on-one, no relationships, no, I don't care. Because I tell people, if you take this challenge, I promise you next week, the girl, the guy of your dream is going to walk in. It's like, oh, I just took this stupid challenge, okay? In fact, pretty much the best way to ensure you're about to meet the woman of your dreams is to take this challenge, okay? Because you'll meet her next week. Anyway, so I've been telling singles for years, look, just take a year off. Just renew your mind. Just decide that. I'm just saying no to that whole category for a year. And about every other week, I get a letter, like sometimes long letters. I get text. I get direct message. I get communication with people real now all over the world who say, Andy, I just finished my year. Just finish my year. Just finish my year. Thank you. Here's what I learned. Thank you. I just finished my year. I got a letter not too long ago from a guy who said, I just met a girl, da da da, and I heard about you. She watched this series you did, Love, Sex, and Dating, and she had just finished her year when we met. Thank you for teaching, because we would have never met otherwise. Thank you. It's a year. You go, year? You know what? You may not think this about you. Here's what I think about you. I think you're worth a year. I think your heart and your soul and your body, I think about you, is worth a year of your time. In light of your past experience, your current circumstances, okay? You just went through a tough divorce and there was no intimacy for a long time and you are ready. You know, and you got that new haircut, you know, and you lost some weight and a little plastic surgery thrown in there, and you're looking good, and you're ready to be back on the market. And you are so vulnerable. And right now you hate this message. And your Heavenly Father who loves you says, whoa, 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 you're too vulnerable. Now's not the time. You go, yeah, but God, I haven't had sex and I don't even, and God's going, I know, I know. I made it. I created it. Once upon a time, there was no sex and I'd done everything else. And I said, God said to himself, I have a great idea. And the angel said, what is it? He said, you wouldn't understand. So God says, look, I understand you're lonely. I mean, you've been through hell sideways, you know, on a skateboard backwards. You know, I know your life's been terrible, but I'm just saying, in light of your current circumstances, what is the wise thing for you to do? In light of your future hopes and dreams, this is why I love talking to teenagers about this. College students, I say, look, you got your whole future ahead of you. And you'll never be happier than your relationships. Why would you do something now that has the potential to undermine your own dreams for the future relationally? What is the wise thing to do? And if you think you know, and no, very few of you are going to do this, but that's okay. I make a profession not a given advice nobody takes. I'm okay with that. As long as you keep showing up, we'll keep doing this, okay? You know what you need to do? You need to pre-decide and write it down. And here's why. About 8 to 12, every 8 to 10 years, studies come out that substantiate old studies, and they claim to be new studies that say, we've heard this 100 times, when you pre-decide and write it down, you are like 10 to 20 times more likely to follow through. If you will write a script, here's what I'm going to say when this occurs. Here's what I'm going to do when this occurs. Here's how I'm going to respond when the invitation surfaces. You pre-decide and you write it down. How far are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Are you going to move in? Are you not going to move in? How long are you going to wait? You need to pre-decide and write it down. And you will never, ever, ever regret that. Now, one last thing. I know what some of you think. You think, Andy, that's really cute, and that was funny, And I'm glad it's almost over, but obviously you live in a cave. They let you out on Sundays. Maybe you get an hour of internet, you know, so you can return email. Then they shut that thing off lest you learn what's going on in the rest of the world. I understand. So here's what you say. Andy, that's fine. But nobody else does this. Nobody else is living that way. Nobody else is waiting around. Nobody else is stepping back from the line. Nobody else is doing that. Now, this is really, really important, okay? This is even more important than the last thing I said was important. So this is super important, okay? That is a statement of fact. It is not an argument for or against anything. It's just a statement. Nobody else is. True. Let's just, nobody else is. What's your point? Well, nobody else is. Well, say it louder, but that's not an argument. That's just a statement. Andy, you're suggesting I do all these things that nobody else is. I'm like, yes, make a point. So let me help you. Here's what you're really saying. I want to kind of put some terms around this. What you're really saying is this, but nobody else is, and I want to be like everybody else. So since that's your objection, and since that's why some of you are going to walk out of here and go, ha, nobody does that, let me just help you. So I want us to say this out loud, because this is your objection, all right? So with some gusto, here we go. But nobody else is, and I... No, you don't. No, you don't. I want a marriage like everybody else. I want a second marriage like most of my... I want regret like everybody else's regret. I want to pass like everybody else's. No, you don't. You already got enough of that. You already have enough regret. You've already got a past. You've already got history. You've already done that. You don't want a marriage like everybody else. You don't want a relationship like everybody else. So to allow yourself to go to, well, since everybody else, that's not an argument. That's just a statement. To make it an argument is an admission. And I know you better than this. It's an admission that you just want to do what everybody else is doing. And you know better than that. Nobody spends their life just trying to be like the average person with the average marriage, with the average past and the average guilt and the average addiction and the average, you know, desires to go in ways that you later regret. Nobody does that. That's not what you want. But if you want what you say you want, you're going to have to step back and do what very few people are doing so you can have the relationships that very few people enjoy. So, in light of your past experience, and we've all got one, in light of your current circumstances, your current stage of life, in light of your future hopes and dreams, and they are your future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing for you to do? You say, Andy, it's extreme. I think you're worth it. Andy's extreme is so unusual. I think you're worth it. I just hope you will. So don't justify. Don't lie to yourself. Don't, well, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong, right up to the line. Flee. Don't flirt with it. Because there's good and there's bad. It's not our cue. There's good and there's bad. That's not where we've been called to live. There's good and there's bad. That's not our cue, but rather what is the wise thing to do? And if you ask that question in this area, if you ask that question in this sensitive, difficult area, you'll never, ever, ever regret it. And you'll be unique, not weird, unique. Because you will have set yourself up for success in the most important arena of life, in the arena of your relationships with other people and with your Father in heaven. What is the wise thing for you to do? Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you for preserving this ancient text. For 2,000 years, it's been sitting there to flee sexual immorality. All other sins a man or woman commits are outside the body, but the man or woman who sins sexually, we sin against our own body. You've warned us. Many of us learned this the hard way. I pray that we would have the wisdom to know what to do with what we just heard and the courage to do it. And Father, I pray for the man or the woman who is, I mean, they were hours away, a day away, a weekend away from a decision that they already knew in their heart was the wrong decision. Give them the courage, no matter how much it cost them financially, no matter what it cost them relationally, no matter what it cost them in their reputation, Father, to choose wisdom over the pressure of this culture. And we pray all of these things in the matchless name of Jesus, who loved us so much, he died for our sins anyway. Amen.